From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Senator Kirk has served this country for over two decades, and we are grateful for his service.
What unites us in, as Americans is much stronger than what divides us.
Yeah.
Yes.
I pledge to start with the presumption that my colleagues, regardless of party, love this country as much as I do, and that all we want is what's best for our children.
Although I'm really sad to have lost this and come up on the other end, I can't think of anything I would have done differently. I feel like we did everything we could do to be successful, and we ran a great campaign that was positive, that gave people a reason to vote for me.
And I think what we saw tonight was a rejection of the extreme agenda, which is making so many people in the state of Illinois victims.
What I hope happens, you know, as soon as tonight, is that the reset button is hit. Because we have got to, we have got to take this fiscal crisis head on and get back to work as soon as next week.
I certainly hope we can get to a budget. I'm sorry that I won't be a part of the process of being in Springfield to get there, but I think that the message from the voters is very clear that, boy, just every door that I knocked on, we need to have a budget in the state.
Some of the voices from election night, some winners, some losers this week. We'll talk about the results in Illinois and where does it all go from here. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel for State Week includes Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio reporter. And in our State House Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, our State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Well, it was a big night for Republicans across the country. Not quite as successful in Illinois, but there were some victories for Republicans. Amanda, let me start with you. Kind of give us the overall view of what took place election night in Illinois.
Well, as expected, you did have Illinois vote for Hillary Clinton for president. We all know, of course, how that turned out. The rest of the nation did not agree. But you saw other statewide successes by Democrats and Democratic women, actually. The comptroller is going to, come December, be Susana Mendoza, currently serving as the Chicago City Clerk. She'd served for a decade in the Illinois House, if that name sounds familiar to any downstate listeners. She beat incumbent Leslie Munger, who, of course, had been appointed to that post by Governor Bruce Rauner, and an expensive race. You also saw, of course, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth win over the U.S. Senate seat, the one that had originally, or not originally, but been held once by President Barack Obama. So Democratic successes there that I think show this state is still very much blue, but you saw Republicans make inroads in the General Assembly like we haven't seen in recent years. In total, they gained six more seats in the General Assembly, two in the Illinois Senate, and more significantly, a net gain of four, because you actually saw five seats won by Republicans in the Illinois House, but then the House GOP lost one seat. So a net of four in the House chamber, and that's enough to take away House Speaker Michael Madigan's super majority of Democrats.
Well, we can talk more about the House and Senate coming up in a little bit, but let me go back to that U.S. Senate race. Brian, Tammy Duckworth, that was touted as one of the few big successes for Democrats across the country. I mean, she's getting a lot of attention for this victory.
Yeah, I think going into Election Day, a lot of Democrats were optimistic about the prospect of a Clinton presidency and a Democratic United States Senate. And at the end of the day, Tammy Duckworth was one of the few bright spots that nationwide Democrats could look to. Most of the I think there was one other Democrat who defeated a Republican that was up at this. It's an Eastern Seaboard state. It's escaping me at the moment. But otherwise, Republicans had a good night for them in terms of, and they're going to maintain control of the U.S. Senate with a Trump presidency coming in. That could have significant implications for the direction of the U.S. Supreme Court. President Obama was not able to fill the vacancy for the last year because the Republicans blocked him from doing that in the Senate. And now I can't imagine there's any scenario in which they'd suddenly confirm Merrick Garland. And so President Trump's going to have at least one vacancy to fill on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Charlie, you've been watching these elections and presidential elections for years. What was your takeaway from Tuesday night?
I think it was a big surprise, and it maybe is, will cause some people who are pollsters to reevaluate their strategy and their design of their polls and maybe who they choose. Because quite obviously, when voters actually went to the polls, they did not follow what the prognosticators said they would in terms of who they voted for president. And I guess there's a lot of soul-searching going on in that community.
Now, they did in Illinois, though, pretty much come down as we expected they would.
Yeah, but not on the national level. And some states that people were counting on as being Clinton supporters turned out to be for Trump. For example, Michigan, Pennsylvania was another one. These were states where the conventional wisdom going in was that Hillary Clinton would win those states and they would be enough for her to get the majority in the Electoral College, but it didn't work out that way.
Brian, you and I talked a little bit about how the map showed all of this sea of red and this little island of blue in the middle of this country, and that was Illinois.
Yeah, it sure was. And really, when you break down Illinois, that was Chicago. If you look at a map of Illinois, it's a pretty red map in terms of the presidential candidate preference, except for Chicago and some of the surrounding areas that went pretty strongly for Hillary Clinton, I think.
It's been that way.
Yeah,
but
right.
Even more so this map than others, I believe. I mean, if you compare, it seems as if there has been a steady increase of red when you look in those pockets. And that, again, we can talk more about the legislature and what it means. But as evidenced by that, I think Democratic seats downstate moved Republican. Maybe that's demographics. Maybe that's other issues as to why. But regardless of that, you saw the map of Illinois turn more red.
Yeah. And I think getting back to one of the things Charlie was talking about the pollsters having to kind of search where they've made mistakes. One of the sort of critiques I've heard is that we have adopted, thanks in large part to Barack Obama's campaign team's successive micro-targeting, where they could go in various neighborhoods in a town in Ohio, and they would buy a bus, they would buy an ad on a particular bus because they knew it would go through the neighborhoods that they wanted to sway. And there's been so much emphasis on demographics and less of an emphasis on the overall message. I think what people who have studied presidential elections throughout history say is that there's often a desire for change after 8 years of one party. And, you know, Donald Trump certainly presented himself as a candidate of change. And ultimately, it seems that that is what swayed a lot of people more than any expectations about how this demographic might have voted that demographic and how different states were seeing a growing Latino population. I think that people put so much emphasis on that, and that's where you get into these prognosticators. And it's not just pollsters anymore, right? We have these statistics experts who take the polls and then apply their own mathematical models on top of that, and we get these predictions that say, well, Donald Trump has only a 15% chance of winning the presidency. I was talking to somebody about this. If I were to, you know, hand you a bag of candy or something and say, well, 15 out of the 100 pieces of candy in here are poisoned, would you like to have some candy? I mean, that there's a good chance of that. People might not, want to take those. It's something that's not totally unexpected, right? I think a lot of people were surprised because it sounds to say Hillary Clinton has an 85% chance of winning the presidency sounds big, but, you know, a 15% chance is something that's going to happen 15 times out of 100.
Well, certainly we see these Democratic votes coming in big metropolitan areas, but there are other states with big metropolitan areas. I mean, Michigan has Detroit, Ohio had Cleveland, you know, Miami and Florida. And those went for Trump. Illinois stayed pretty predominantly blue from a statewide overall vote total. Is it just an outlier when it comes to all of these other states? Certainly in the Midwest, it appears to be.
Well, when you look at the states that were solidly for Clinton, you have New York, which has, the second largest metropolitan area in the country. You have California, which has the largest. And you have Illinois, which has the third largest. So I guess maybe the takeaway is that in states like Ohio or Wisconsin or maybe Pennsylvania, their urban areas aren't as dominant as we have in Illinois. For example, if somebody would have told me back when I was a working reporter 20-some years ago that the day would come when DuPage County would vote for a Democratic candidate for president three successive times, I would have said they were nuts. Uh-huh. But that happened. All of the Collier counties except for McHenry voted for Clinton. And back in my day, as I say, that was unthinkable.
Yeah, and I think
it'd be like the Cubs winning the World Series.
Crazy, Charlie, just crazy. I think that, you know, Detroit doesn't really compare to Chicago anymore. It's a city that's been really hard hit. It's a shell of its former self in a lot of ways. Ohio is a very different state in that it's kind of like I used to travel in Ohio somewhat 10 years ago, and it's kind of like one giant suburb, right? There's no huge cities. It's a lot of – and so it's therefore a much more mix of rural and suburban and urban, and that makes it more susceptible to going Democratic or Republican than you would expect from a traditional big city like New York, Chicago, or L.A., as Charlie was saying.
You know, I wanted to tap into something that you had said earlier, though, Brian, and what – you look at, I think, what the country was desiring, and in a sense, that does match what Illinois wanted just 2 years ago and the message that voters sent. Of course, you can't distill any of these votes down to one simple question. You have factors, obviously, with every single race. But I think the predominant message of Trump was a desire for change. And when you look at, I think, largely what propelled Governor Bruce Rauner's rise was also a desire for change. Brian, I know you've reported a lot on, in fact, similarities between Rauner and Trump. And of course, there are plenty of differences as well between the two men, but they both cast themselves as outsiders whose lack of government experience was a selling point, not a detraction. And they both said, I've been successful businessmen, and I can apply those principles to the government, a government that needs it.
And they also have this idea in common that we don't want to get too in the weeds here, but it's called stealth democracy, right? There's a whole book written about this in the world of political science. And it's this idea that you kind of tell people, you know, government should be easier than it is. You just got to get in there and have a practical roll up your sleeves kind of attitude. And because it's not easy, well, that's just special interests controlling things. And I think both of them kind of have presented that message. And what we've seen in Illinois is that governing is not actually as easy as that, that people don't just, you know, people are not only disagreeing on policy issues because special interests are telling them to. People have deeply held beliefs about policies, and there are different ways of approaching things. And I think that that's something that, you know, some of the gridlock we've seen in Illinois, well, I guess we may not see it in Washington, because you at least have President-elect Trump and the Republican Congress, you know, could be more on the same page because they at least share a party designation, which we do not have, obviously, in between the Illinois governor and legislature.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Trump and Rauner, because there's one thing the governor has really tried to shy away from this year, and that is any type of really showing much support for Donald Trump. I think at one point
or
he did say—
even saying his name.
Yeah, at one point he did say he would support the nominee of the party.
Right.
But he's really refused to come out and say he would support Donald Trump. So does that create some issues for him now if, you know, Illinois needs some help from the federal government, for example?
I don't know so much about that.
He still hasn't.
Yeah, he still
hasn't.
For the record.
Sorry, Brian. Yeah, you get this. He still hasn't said anything. His restatement after the election didn't mention Trump. He hasn't been out in public. Prior to the election, he kept a really low profile. Like, he handed out Halloween to kids and he attended the Cubs game, but he hasn't had an event on his public schedule, the governor, that is. Nor has he, as we tape, post-election. So we haven't even had the chance to ask him about Trump.
And
sorry,
he used
go ahead,
to, and yeah, and he would just shut down. If you tried to ask him about then candidate Trump, he would just kind of walk away, and that would be the end of the questioning. So I think that it puts him in a very interesting and potentially tricky position, because Trump supporters are very passionate about President-elect Trump, and presumably there's a lot of overlap between those Trump supporters and the Republican Party base that Bruce Rauner is going to need to turn out for him 2 years from now. And yet here he can't even say the man's name. And instead of, I think he was probably just hoping to ride out the election, maybe if there would have been a President Clinton, people would have stopped asking him about Trump. Now every time Trump says something, as presumably he will continue to do, that makes headlines and is perhaps perceived as outrageous by some portion of America, you know, Rauner's going to be asked about it, and he's going to have to decide, do I anger the huge majority in Illinois that went for candidate Clinton, or do I anger potentially the smaller minority but bigger part of the Republican Party that is enthusiastic about President-elect Trump.
And Trump certainly helped with the turnout, surely. I mean, downstate it appears. And that's what led to some of those seats gained by Republicans, which Amanda mentioned at the top, Republicans picking up some seats in both the House and the Senate. Certainly the Trump factor, I think, played a role there in some of those districts.
Well, I think it played a role both in the wins and the losses, in the sense that Southern Illinois has always been very conservative, and the Democrats elected from Southern Illinois were very conservative Democrats. They did not agree on a lot of policy issues with their colleagues from Cook County or the suburbs. And so the Trump appeal in those conservative areas helped defeat some of the Democrats who lost in downstate areas, plus the money that the governor and his allies spent and tying people to Mike Madigan. That was another big factor. But if you look at it, I think the flip side of the coin is the Republicans, for all the money they spent and all their effort, only won one legislative race in the Chicago area. And that was in McHenry County, where Jack Franks retired from the House, and his designated successor was beaten by a Republican. Now, that is a Republican district, and the only reason Jack Franks was elected there is because Jack Franks is Jack Franks. As a matter of fact, he was elected chair of the McHenry County Board. But everywhere else in the suburbs, all those Democratic targets won.
Well, let me play devil's advocate there a bit and say that there was at least a thought for a while that Democrats could pick up seats during this campaign because Hillary Clinton, they felt, would run very strong, be a lot of female votes cast during this election, would go heavy for her, maybe the Latino vote. So in some ways, did Republicans avoid a catastrophe there by not losing seats? In fact, they held on to a seat that was really in play, the Michael McAuliffe, the House lawmaker.
The only Republican in the city of Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I look at it that the opportunities for the Democrats to pick up seats weren't in the suburban areas, and for all the money spent on Michael McAuliffe, he's part of a legacy. His father, Roger McAuliffe, who died in a tragic drowning accident up in northern Wisconsin some years ago, was a longtime lawmaker from that area. And as a matter of fact, he had held that seat even when all around him in the city was going Democratic. So there's sort of a family legacy there. And in the suburban areas, the ability of the Democrats to hold off the Republican challenge, I actually thought they would lose some of those suburban seats. But every seat except the Franks seat that was lost was outside the Chicago metro region. And I think the Clinton factor and the Trump factor, I think, benefited Democrats in those suburban target districts. It hurt them downstate. And where they had hoped to pick up seats were particularly in college towns, and they had challenges in the district that includes Macomb, Charleston, Carbondale, and the Metro East area. And the only person who lost in there was Dwight Kaye, who was beaten by Katie Stewart down in the,
Metro
the name
East
of the district.
Area. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's down in the Metro East area. There was some hope at one point that maybe in the Springfield region, a couple of the appointed representatives, Representative Sarah Wojcicki-Jimenez, Representative Avery Byrne, could be defeated on the strength of union support. And that didn't work out either.
Well, and this was, as we say, we've said before here, presidential years tend to be more Democratic. We certainly saw that play out with Clinton, Congresswoman Duckworth's Senate campaign, and Susana Mendoza for the controller. I think the Democrats are in those suburban areas, maybe should be a little more worried in 2 years from now, though. And who knows how the Trump factor will play in, but those are generally tend to be more Republican years. Now, 2 years ago, when Bruce Rauner spent $60 million and won by 5 points, the Democrats didn't, again, as you said, Charlie, did not lose anything in the suburbs. There was one seat in the Quad Cities that flipped in the entire General Assembly. But I think that now they have had they're not just going to have Bruce Rauner running for re-election, as he said he's going to do. They've had now millions of dollars already spent attacking Michael Madigan. And no matter who the Democrats put up to run for governor in 2 years, I think that Governor Rauner is going to try and make it so that Michael Madigan is on the ballot once again. And he's been very unpopular. And we've talked on this show about the Republicans have tried fire Madigan campaigns in the past, but they've never had the kind of money that Rauner and Ken Griffin and a couple other wealthy people were willing to put behind it. And I'm beginning to wonder if the Democrats are going to have to come up with some sort of better strategy than they've had for trying to counter that message if they want to not be sort of have that as an albatross around the neck of a lot of candidates who don't really have that close of ties to Madigan. But it seemed to work so much that anyone running as a Democrat just about seemed to have that brush painted across their candidacy.
Amanda, let me go to you because for those that don't follow this that much, the Democrats still control the House. They control the Senate. So do these gains really matter much for Republicans in the overall, the overall concept of a legislative session?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. You're having, of course, the governor continue to push his agenda, and he, in fact, has called for a leaders meeting when just next week lawmakers return to Springfield. In a sense, no, you haven't seen the Democratic supermajority operational for really the entire tenure since Rauner has been governor. So is that going to be significant? No, not yet. And yet, I think that if you read the reaction from House Speaker Michael Madigan to the results of the election, he isn't taking it at all as any sort of message from voters that they don't like the Democratic agenda. He is instead putting his feet in the sand and saying, no, we are standing ground against what he once again referred to as Rauner's anti-middle class agenda. So I think largely it is going to be a question, once again, of where the leadership goes versus the rank and files. And if anything, you might see Democrats even more concerned about their prospects later now that they've shown, and it's been shown that they can lose, they're going to even more need money from their leadership, which is how this works. Same with Republicans on Rauner's side, of course.
Amanda, let me ask you then, as far as the state budget, which appears to be really the biggest issue out there, of course, if Madigan is feeling that way, that, you know, nobody's against our agenda, and Rauner, of course, feeling a bit more victorious because they picked up seats, doesn't seem like there's any reason, any impetus to get both sides together and say, you know, I'm going to compromise a little bit more. Maybe they both feel they're in the right.
I think they do both feel like they're in the right very much. I spoke with Senate Republican leader Christine Rodogno. She said, no, this shows that it is time for Democrats to compromise. We've been willing to do so. I haven't actually spoken with the speaker or anything, but that, again, was very much his statement and has been his message all along in various press conferences that, you know, we've tried, we're reasonable. What the governor wants isn't reasonable, and it's not tied to the agenda. So what are the reasons for either side moving? Well, Illinois' credit rating, all of the pain that has been caused, businesses that are upset about the uncertainty. There are, I think, a host of really legitimate reasons for both sides to move off, to care, to compromise, to get a budget. It's just that they aren't per se political ones, perhaps,
Charlie,
or at least political ones that they'll take seriously enough to change their ways.
And Charlie and Brian, let me throw that to you as well. I mean, do these election results, are they going to matter when it comes to, you know, budget talks, budget negotiations, or is that just at a different level?
I think it's hard to say. I know that sounds kind of wishy-washy, and I guess it is, but you don't know what's going through the minds of the two major protagonists. People who look at this dispassionately say, oh, sure, there's room for compromise. The governor can back off on some of his anti-labor stuff. Madigan can yield on some of the workers' compensation, tort reform stuff, and they can work something out. And back in the day, they did. And it's not as though anybody who's looked at the situation says, oh, we can get by just by raising taxes or just by making cuts. It's going to take both, and it's going to require some hard votes. And the way lawmakers make those hard votes is if they know they're in a safe district and if they know it's a bipartisan agreement. That's historically been the case every time but one when taxes were raised. And until you get beyond the personalities. I mean, for a moment, put yourself in Mike Madigan's shoes. People have spent tens of millions of dollars up and down the state trying to paint you as being the most evil person ever to hold office in Illinois. And so now are you going to be all warm and fuzzy and sit down and say, oh, sure, I'm ready to cut a deal? Maybe what it'll take is rank-and-file lawmakers going to the leadership and saying, for the sake of my district, for the sake of my folks back home, we have to reach some kind of an arrangement to let state government function and to fund these vital services that are going by the wayside.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie, you made this comment about it's going to take taxes and revenue. Strangely, both Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan have said the same thing. They both agree that it's going to take a combination of tax increases and cuts to programs in order to balance the budget. So everything else is about the labor aspects of the governor's agenda. And I think that the speaker views this as perhaps an existential threat to the Democratic Party, because the governor, you look at his and perhaps his own tenure, really. I mean, the governor, one of the reasons he wants to go after labor is that they're one of the big funding sources for the Democratic Party. And we've seen in other states that when you go after particularly the public employee unions, that really hurts fundraising for Democrats.
Yeah, I think it's more than the politics. So I think Bruce Rauner deep down inside has a sincerely held belief that unions are bad, particularly in the public sector. And I think deep down inside, beyond the politics, that Michael Madigan has a deeply held belief that unions are good and they benefit the middle class and the working class. And it's kind of built into the DNA of both individuals. And so the difficulty is trying to get them to understand that there's some grain of truth in what the other person is saying, and then therefore we should kind of try and move together for the greater good.
Yeah, well, and I know we only have a couple minutes left, but one thing Charlie, you've always said is that the speaker is generally does what's best for keeping the Democrats in control of the House. And I think he is in a unique position now in that he is one of the big liabilities for Democratic power in Illinois in terms of the House of Representatives, and that the Republicans were pretty successful in a number of, as you said, downstate campaigns using that against the candidates. And so I kind of wonder how he navigates himself being a liability for his own power. It's a unique situation.
Well, I'm going to go now to our notes from the field. Charlie, let me go to you.
Well, getting away from politics for a moment, earlier this week, Attorney General Lisa Madigan announced that she is suing Volkswagen over the environmental impact of the cheating that they did on emissions testing. Now, she has joined other attorneys general in suing them and being part of a settlement, $275 million settlement, over violating state consumer protection laws. This latest lawsuit filed in Cook County deals with the environmental impact of those phony emission tests or the software put into the Volkswagen.
And Brian Mackey.
Voters also approved a constitutional amendment. The Illinois Constitution, I guess now or maybe when the ballot is finally certified, will be officially changed to prioritize transportation funding over almost everything else state government does, education, human services, and whatnot. It proved to be very popular with voters. So money that is collected from gas taxes, license plates, those sort of things will now only be able to be used on transportation-related expenditures.
And lawmakers will be back for veto session next week. So next time, we'll be talking about that on State Week. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Finicky, and Brian Mackey. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.